Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
In this part of Derek's interview, we talk more about his family life, how he's built his relationships, and just kind of the spirit that he brings to, you know, all different aspects of his life and how people have impacted all the different places he's been. So we hope you enjoy. I kind of want to start by talking about how meaningful your relationships with the other three producers have been, not only for the project, but for you personally. So, you know, I obviously have better context for everything that you guys have worked through and been challenged by through this project. But yeah, could you just explain how you advocate for your relationships and where your love for each other kind of comes from?
Heck yeah. There have been multiple times like in this project where we've started to get unaligned and out of alignment. And it is very easy to get angry at each other and do all of these things. But ultimately, like I think we all just come back to who we were at the beginning of the project. And we just remind each of us, like, hey, are you still that person? Like, are you still the person that is tired of waiting around? Are you still the person that wants to take this leap? Are you still the person that is searching for that next story and able to wake up and create with your best friends? Like, are you still that person that's tired of just creating things to make money? If you aren't, let's have a talk. If you are, though, let's get back to work. And so like ultimately we're all also all of us have a really firm foundation and a relationship with God. And so we're praying together on every meeting. We're encouraging each other well beyond this project, outside of this project. But ultimately we're all still human and we mess up we're no stranger. Like, even now there are things that we're working through and figuring out and needing to talk about in the midst of chaos, but we have to push it off. So we just make it through this one. So I think ultimately just, how do we do that? We remember our foundation on our relationship with God. We go into each conversation with love. And as long as we're going into every conversation, us versus the issue and not you versus me, we're going to be okay. And so, does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, totally.
I feel like could be a marriage and family counselor right there. That applies to so much more than working on a team on something that's business related. That could be a great way to approach anything collaborative.
Definitely. I got that advice from my ex-girlfriend. And I've put that into every relationship since. And ultimately doing business with each other is almost like a marriage. And especially whenever you start a business and you create an LLC and you do all of this stuff, people say, don't do business with your best friends. Like, don't do business with your family. Like, I've only ever done business with my best friends and my family. Yeah. But we've had clear understandings and a clear foundation of trust with each other. And whenever that trust has been broken, it's either been resolved or we're done. Mm-hmm. Like, and it doesn't have to be more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Like it is that simple, because if we actually love each other, then we want the best for each other and we want more for each other than from each other. So if things aren't working out, like, dude, let's take a huge step back and figure this out, because I want you to be okay. And I don't want you killing yourself. Like Caleb and I, back in 2018, had a very serious conversation about the next steps for From My Eyes, our production company, From My Eyes. Mm-hmm. And I was in LA working full time. He was in New Orleans, basically running the production company. And he called me and was like, hey, I can't keep living like this. And I started realizing, like, dude, I'm the one having a whole lot of fun while Caleb is doing all the paperwork and COIs and budgeting and emails and all of this stuff. And he's just kind of a slave to this. Like, this isn't working, and it's not working for him. It's going great for me, but it's not working for him. And so we had a great conversation and we figured it out, and I was the best man at his wedding. And we worked through it, and you can do that. And it takes patience. It takes long walks sometimes, cold showers, like all of that, but you can figure it out, and you can be a good man. You can be a good woman, in business and life, and, and do what's right. You can.
Yep.
It's not that you will, you can.
Do you know why I was looking at you during that?
Tell me.
I was thinking of reconciliation.
I was about to say, it sounds so very reconciliatory.
Does Derek know the verse and the reason why 518 became 518?
So, the verse in the Bible?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So last year we rebranded. So 518 Family Services is a newer name. And it stems from 2 Corinthians 5:18, which says all this is from God who gives us the ministry of reconciliation. Mm. I kind of butchered it a little bit, but that's the general sense.
So you're talking about, you know, reconciling with each other, reconciling with the mission, reconciling with your core values, but you're also talking about starting every meeting, starting every project with, you know, your eyes on God through prayer. So I looked over at you like, wow, that's very reconciliatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Heck yeah. Oh yeah. And it, I mean, like not every meeting do we start off that way. We 90% of the time, like there's some times where we've forgotten and we hang up before we pray and stuff. But like ultimately we've built that foundation. Mm-hmm. We're either ending in a prayer or building the foundation of the conversation in prayer, you know? And so it's like, there's definitely an order of things and an alignment that can occur. But ultimately, like, I don't, whenever you bring the spiritual side into it, like you're also doing business for the kingdom together.
Right.
And you also now have ownership and whatever reward there is in heaven for how God uses this. And so it's like, there's so many levels to doing it, living a life trying to do things that are good, in God's eyes. But I totally agree.
I want to switch gears to talking about you yourself more personally a little bit, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
So something that we've been exploring lately, primarily with our CEO, is the defining the term orphan. So he calls himself the chief executive orphan because he was born into foster care, raised in foster care.
His mother was in foster care.
Yeah, his mother was an orphan when he was born. So he has committed his life to researching the orphan term. And a lot of research suggests that anyone who has lost one or more parent either to death, to separation, dysfunction, etc., could be considered an orphan. And our CEO has coined the term orphan spirit, which is sort of, you know, spirit of rejection, a little the voice inside your head that causes doubt wherever you go because of this circumstance that has happened to you.
Sure.
And you've mentioned that you lost your mom to cancer. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to just explore that with you because I see you sort of as a personification of meaningful relationships. Like you are the kind of person, every conversation you have, you're locked in. You make the person you're talking to feel so valued. So how have you continued to have a support system around you despite, you know, the losses that you've experienced?
Because by definition, you are orphaned.
Oh, heck yeah. I lost my dad in 2009 and then my mom in 2017. And I think that started, I think whenever I lost or when my dad passed away, I didn't lose him. I know right where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
But
I love that. Yeah.
But when my dad passed, it really brought my mom and sister together. And then, my mom and sister and I together. And then it really challenged our relationship over the years. Cause just as a boy being raised in a house without a dad was, had all of its challenges and stuff. And then whenever my mom passed away in 2017, it was just like, holy cow, like you were on your own.
Mm.
Like you're on your own. And so I think in some ways I'm still learning. What was the question again? Sorry, remind me.
That's okay. Essentially, has that orphan spirit ever had an impact on you? / how have you been able to still establish a village? Because I know that that you do have a family that you call mom and dad.
Yeah, I think in flaws, just in shortcomings, and like even in a sense of like you've asked me this question twice and my reaction to it while you're asking is like, oh shoot, we're talking about this. Oh gosh, what do I say? All of this stuff. And then I forget the question.
You're good. You're good.
It's almost a trauma response.
Yes. So definitely, we want to be respectful of your privacy,
dude,
and
forget it. No, I made a movie about it. It's out there.
Fair enough.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah. No, I think just leaning into it, life's hard. Life is extremely difficult. And thank God thank God that he sent his son to die on a cross for our sins that could create a foundation for so many people to be able to start off with and start off with forgiveness and with flaws and for God to be able to create a world where we can have where we can have the same savior to be able to build a foundation off of.
Mm-hmm.
Because that makes building a new family and not a new family, building a continuing
expanding your family. Yeah,
continuing your family a lot easier. Like, and it still comes with its challenges. And I've had, like there was a family that invited me into their lives for a season and then pushed me out, after things got complicated. And I was like, oh, this feels like a breakup. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I've been broken up with, and this sucks. And it really hurt.
Yeah.
And ultimately that led me to realizing that I had my mom and dad 2.0, my godparents, my mom and dad, like Jennifer and Shannon Welch in my life, that opened their arms and their home to me and my sister. And, for my sister and I to also, how do I say it? To also receive that in two different ways. Mm. Like I was looking for parents. I want a mom and dad in my life that I can go to and talk to. And God provided that. My sister isn't looking for a mom and dad, but she's looking for wise counsel, mm-hmm. and things like that. And so that's complicated. And I think you just have to go into it with grace and mercy, for people and yourself. And that family that really, really, really hurt me, they're doing their best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't do it on purpose. Things got complicated. And at the beginning, good intentions were there and pure intentions were there. And then they didn't know what to do whenever a situation arose.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest fear of, if it comes down to like, I will always be second choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and I was told, you know, no, that's never going to happen. Why would that ever happen? And then it does. And it's like, oh, well, peep, dude, mm-hmm. now we're funked. Like, yeah, like, and so, but like they are they're amazing people. It got hard. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have to go into it with grace and mercy and forgiveness and all of that. And, but yeah, dude, I like, even still, I started seeing a counselor, I think, in October, November, mm-hmm. Because like there are certain things and traumatic responses in my life that I do not want to bring into my marriage with Natalie. And I'm very grateful that I met Natalie in my 30s and not in my early 20s, because her and I communicate very, very well. And we're both level-headed whenever it comes to each other, and we've just grown a lot together. And so like there are things that I've got this roll of paper over here that has been leaning up against the corner, that because my counselor Jeff gave me homework and I don't want to do it.
Yeah, counseling homework is the worst kind.
All right. Yeah, so dude, accountability.
Yeah.
Do the homework. But no, it's more like I don't want to face what I'm gonna have to put on this paper, and I'm just like pushing it off. And he wants me to make a trauma egg. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of a trauma egg. Mm-hmm. So that's great. But
that sounds like such fun. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. So... but it's like, oh, sorry.
No, keep going. I have a follow up, but keep going.
Oh yeah. No, but like it's a lot, and it's complicated, and it's messy. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean messy's bad. It's just different. And it's that's life, and life happens, and life is also incredible. There's so like the fact that I got to experience the love of my biological parents, even for a day, let alone 15 years, mm-hmm. and then 23 years, 15 years for my dad, 23 years for my mom. What a gift. Like, and so it's all about how you look at it and as well. And then who you're looking at it with, and then how you cope with the hard shiz, because I'm so grateful God protected me from numbing my pain.
Mm-hmm.
And now whenever people go through loss, I just remember something that my mom always said, and you'll hear it in from my eyes, but she would always say, feel it, learn from it, move on, move forward. Mm-hmm. Feel it, feel all of it, all of the pain, feel all of it. Don't numb any of it. Learn whatever lesson you can while you're in it, because there is something, there's always something mm-hmm. in this. Learn whatever lesson that is, and then move forward. And one of my favorite comedians, Mark Lowry, he says, I was on a call with him the other day, and he says, cause we're talking about a project with him. And, he says, invite change, even in the hard stuff. Because God is often you interact with God way more during the interruptions of life mm-hmm. than you do in the day to day. Like we see God way more in those interruptions. And dude, even whenever absolute hell is happening, isn't it crazy that the very thing that the sailor, the on the ocean prays that God would protect him from is the same exact thing that the farmer begs God for. And so like, remember who's in your boat, be in the right boat in the middle of the storm. Make sure Jesus is taking a nice nap downstairs. Like, make sure you're in the right boat. Cause I feel really bad for the other boats that were on the Sea of Galilee that day. Cause that must've been nuts.
Yeah.
But you know, be the disciples that have Jesus in their boat and are really just on a roller coaster. Cause wouldn't life be a whole lot more fun if we had just known we were going to live through it, even if it kills us, even if it kills you, dude.
And I love that.
That's another Mark Lowry quote.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So, yeah.
Hey friends, let's talk about real impact. Imagine a single mom struggling to keep her family together or a child sleeping on the floor because they don't have a bed. Now imagine you being able to meet that need. That's exactly what happens every day through Care Portal.
Care Portal is a platform that connects real-time needs from local children and families to people like you, churches and individuals who want to make a difference. With just a few clicks, you can step in, meet a need, and build a meaningful connection that changes lives.
This isn't just charity. It's the church and the community coming together, showing up in love and action. So if you're ready to turn compassion into action, visit careportal.org and see how you can be a part of the movement, because connection changes everything.
Visit careportal.org for more information on how to sign up and start meeting the needs of children and families in your own zip code. Once again, that's careportal.org.
Thank you, Care Portal, for sponsoring the Mended Futures podcast. I was going to ask you, because you've experienced it. You have the lived experience of being an orphan at 15, adolescence, and then at the very end of adolescence, young adulthood, you're a double orphan. Biblically, you hear about widows and orphans all the time. And then for a long time in history, people did not use the word orphan. Mm-hmm. But orphanages will actually report, you know, numbers and stats about single orphans and double orphans, and the power of using the word orphan, which sounds so, I can only imagine when Taylor said it out loud, just the word orphan sounds harsh. And it sounds, and to hear Mr. Day talk about it, it sounds harsh and it feels so much harsher. And in some ways, there's power to bringing back the word that feels harsh, because there is, you know, when you hear take care of the widows and the orphans. So I kind of want to go to that as a follow-up question. What should someone in your village, or what should someone in a village say or do? Because bad things happen. Grief is yuck. At first, I feel like the village does a good job. We're from the South. My family, food is the love language. We just bring the food, and we, you know, we shower people around the time of the funeral or the, but then people fall away, and you hear people who experience grief. There's this season of loneliness because people go away, because as you're experiencing the grief, it's, we don't know what to say. We don't know what to do. What would you say to the village if someone is experiencing what you've experienced? You're an orphan at a fairly young age. What did you need? And what would you want a village to know if there's someone like a Derek out there?
Dude, I think make sure I hit all three points. I'm just going to say them and then go through each of them, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. One, find a Zach Trammell, and I'll explain that. Two, check in periodically. That's the other one. And then three, encourage the orphan or whoever is experiencing this loss to not be a victim of it. Mm-hmm. So, number one, Zach Trammell is the most honest and loyal and just good-hearted, one of the most, if not the most, men in my life. That guy not only sat through 10,000 hours of footage with me, but the day my mom passed away, packed a bag, and without asking, just moved into our house for 3 weeks and just sat there with my sister and I in our mess. Mm-hmm. And he didn't try and make us feel better. He sat there and he felt, I don't know how he did it. I really don't. And I've tried to do it, dude. I still try to do it. And it is crazy, crazy how difficult this is. But the dude should teach a masterclass, because maybe he doesn't care. No, I'm joking. No, but he sat there in our mess and just felt it like Jesus, because Jesus was feeling our pain and as well. Like, Jesus has felt our pain. And he sat there and he didn't try and make us laugh or anything, but he laughed whenever we were laughing. Sometimes he cried whenever we cried, but if he wasn't crying, he sat there and he felt it with us. And then it just even hit harder in like 2020 and 2021 when we went through all the footage after that. And I just remember my sister had started jiu-jitsu and I went to the gym with her. And we came back and we always had my computer, Zach's computer, and then a TV that had like movies playing on it, or periodically we would stop and play video games, and just take a break from everything. And we came back and Zach was sitting in the chair, but he wasn't playing, like on the couch away from the bay, and he wasn't playing video games. And I was like, you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm good. And I was like, did you hit a long clip? Cause we had a rule. If it's longer than 10 minutes, get Derek. And he's like, no. And I was like, what's wrong? And he just started getting quiet. I'm like, bro, what's going on? And he's like, I'm just not ready to watch your mom die again. And he's like, and then he just started breaking down. And I was just like, and we sat there and we cried together, and then we started making terrible jokes together with my sister there, who went through the same thing. And it's like, but he gets it. And he allowed himself to get it because he sat there with us in our mess and he felt it with us because he loves us. That's Jesus. Zach Trammell was Jesus in our life. And he showed us Christ's love in that season in a way I had never experienced that before. And I will always regard him as one of the best. So find a Zach Trammell.
So find a person, who feels like Jesus.
Find a person. Number one. Yeah. Who can be Jesus in your life in that season. Mm-hmm. And man, pray that God provides that for you. Cause he can. And so there's that. Second thing was check in often. We've had friends that I had a friend, Hannah Sheffield, who and great drummer.
Sick.
She was a great friend as well. I didn't know her nearly as well as my friends at church. Zach knew her incredibly well. But I knew her. She went to my youth group and I would say we were friends. Like if we were going out to dinner, it would always be Hannah, come on. Like, you know, we're going to, you know, Chili's or whatever. So Hannah, incredible drummer. She was on the way home one night, and got shot, hit a tree and passed away basically. And all because this guy shot the wrong person in the same car. And so this incredible woman died for no reason, and her family came, brought so many communities together in Shreveport. First time I had seen a mixed number of white people and black people in my church on one day. Mm-hmm. It was the most diverse crowd I'd ever seen, and it was really wonderful. And I remember Ben Schmaltz getting up there and saying, hey, you're here today, for this family, but make sure you're still there for them in 3 months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're still there for them in 6 months. Make sure you're just checking in, even a text, no matter if they respond or not, just send it. If you think of them, send it. And so I would just say, like, if your friend is going through something, if the thought ever crosses your mind, oh, dude, I still can't believe they went through that. Text them and just see how they're doing. And that doesn't mean you have to drop everything if they need something, but just letting them know that you're thinking about them, that means a lot. And then third, I forgot the third. What was my third one?
Oh, man, don't do that to us.
Oof. Come on, dude. Don't be a victim.
Boom. Yes.
Good one.
Donald Miller wrote an incredible book.
I love Donald Miller.
Yes, he's amazing. He wrote an incredible book called Blue Like Jazz.
Then
following Blue Like Jazz was my favorite book I've ever read, called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. Hmm. And Donald Miller in that book documents his journey of turning Blue Like Jazz, which was his quarter life memoir, turning Blue Like Jazz into a feature film. And so I read that book whenever I was going to, whenever I was starting to edit From My Eyes. And I would not have been able to make that movie if it hadn't been for A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And I met Donald Miller at a breakfast spot here in Tennessee, and I got to tell him that, and I love that. And so, but there's a line in there where he talks about, talks about Viktor Frankl, to bring it back. Viktor Frankl, wrote a book talking about man's search for meaning. And I have not read this book yet, but I will still encourage everybody to read it, because it's amazing. From what I've heard, it's amazing. In this book, it talks, in A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, it uses Viktor Frankl as this example of not being a victim, like in your own life. He talks about how Viktor Frankl was not an unwilling victim, but a grateful participant in God's, but a grateful participant while he was a tree in God's story about a forest. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And in a later book that I forgot, Hero on a Mission by Donald Miller, he talks about the four archetypes in every story. So do y'all know what the four archetypes are in, mm-hmm. in every story?
Tell us.
So they are the victim, the villain, the hero, and the guide. Mm. So I will humbly use myself as the example for this. When my parents died, I was a victim of this situation. We're all victims at some point. We can't help it. We live on Earth. Bad shiz happens. Mm-hmm. The dinosaurs were having a great Friday until an asteroid hit them, and they were victims of death. So
yep.
If the dinosaurs exist, who knows? But yeah. We'll ask God on the other side of tomorrow. But
yeah.
We're all victims at some point in our lives. And we can either choose to stay there, or we can get angry and we can get mad and we can really accept that victim title. And we can say, this bad stuff happened to me and there's nothing I can do about this. So I'm just going to continue being angry, and I'm going to make the lives around me feel what I went through. And I'm going to make sure that they know my pain, and I'm going to bring them down with me as whether you know this or not, like your actions are basically speaking louder than your feelings or whatever, but you can choose to bring others down with you. Mm-hmm. And you can be a villain. You become a villain. Don't do that.
Yeah.
So we'll rewind back to victims. So at some point we all start as a victim, and you can either get angry or you can get to work and you can say, you know what? I'm not staying here, and I'm doing whatever it takes to get out of this. I'm doing whatever healthy thing I can do to get out of this. And I'm going to take as many people with me as I can. And that's whenever you become a hero. And if you become a hero and you see yourself through that full journey of recovery and the hero's journey, which starts with you as a victim and ends with you as a changed human being. If you go on that journey long enough and you get to that new you, you get to become a guide to future heroes of their stories. Mm. And so become a hero. We're all victims at some point. Don't get angry and bring others down and be a villain, but get out of that pit, bring as many people as you possibly can with you, become a hero, and then be a guide to future heroes whenever they're going through the shiz that life throws at them as well. And then if you get old enough, I assume you become a victim again and you get to go through that all over,
over that entire
process. Yeah. Goodness, Woody and Buzz Lightyear have been through what? Four now? They're about to make a fifth one?
They're tired. Awesome. They're tired.
I'm tired for them.
Give them a break.
Yes. Yeah, dude. Goodness. Oh, so,
let them
so
rest.
Yeah.
Yes.
But wow. that's that whole process. And I think to bring it back, be there for people experiencing loss, men and women, like widows, widowers, orphans, all of that. Love the ever living literal hell out of them. Bless their socks off and be there for them, even in their mess. And when you're tired, pray for strength and just use the gifts and things that God's given you to be able to invest that back into these heroes, these potential heroes in this extreme loss. Superman lost his entire planet. Like, you know, there's a movie called Brightburn that came out. That was, what if Superman became a bully instead of a superhero? Like, you don't want that outcome. And right. So all of that to say, like, just be there for him and feel those things. Find a Zach, be there for him in the long run, and don't be a victim.
I can 1,000% see why Taylor wanted you to be a guest, yep, because the topic of our podcast is mended futures. Mm. You have explained so many times and in so many different ways how you are mending your future. And as you chronicle that through your documentary From My Eyes, and as you are leading the 100-page project, you are mending other people's futures. And that is so powerful. I love the idea of the hero's story as kind of the last thing.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
Absolutely. And it was an honor getting to speak with you guys. Thanks to you for sharing your platform with me. I'm honored that I would get to talk with y'all as well.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.